Welcome to the mystical world we live in with Almi. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almi.
Mystical world we live in. My name is Almin, and we have got prepared for you today some questions that we hope you will enjoy sharing the answers with us. Ruhir Shadeh is with us online, and he has prepared those questions for us. Ruhir, welcome, and thank you for assisting us.
Thank you. The first question is about secrets of the hidden realms, and this person is asking, whatever happened to this notion that the people of the inner earth would be emerging, or how are we on this plan? What's the status of this plan?
Great. That's very good that you ask that, because I actually haven't spoken about it for quite a while with anyone, and there is some very interesting developments right in that particular subject. Now, the prophecy that the inner earth people will come forth, strangely enough, it's not new to humanity. It was given for the first time in the late 1800s by the Mormon prophets when they spoke about the 10 lost tribes that would be coming forward at some point and that they will be coming out of the earth. So this became very relevant when there was a major stab made at getting the New Jerusalem, as it is called in Revelations, to materialize at the end of 2006. Thank heavens that it didn't, because illusion was not gone, even though Mother thought that it was. It reared its head again because of time tunnels that came through from the past. And so what happened is that at that time they were due to come forth in March, I believe, of 2007, that it was supposed to coincide with this issue of the New Jerusalem, or the City of Mother and Father of Light, but was cancelled. Recently, again, there has been activity around that, and here is what it is. As we've discussed with our listeners on previous episodes that we've done with the mystical world we live in, we have a situation where libraries have been opening, and they've been opening in a very specific order. First the main three, then seven, then 12, and each level up was a major jump in consciousness. Well, part of the 12 were the Nazca, two libraries that were drawn in by these huge geoglyphs of the baby condor and the flower in Nazca, Peru, which is the high desert southern Peruvian area. Well, the Arunatvi, which is one of the two races that guarded those libraries, the Arunatvi left a message, and it came through one of the oracles of one of the sacred orders that are, you know, rising to meet the challenge of being custodians of these bodies of sacred information. And one of the oracles received a strong message from the Arunatvi that there was a device they were waiting to hand over to Mother that nobody has asked them for. And what it was about is that they had the key to open the membrane in the inner earth, to open a gate so that the membrane eventually could dissolve so that access can be made from the inner earth to the outer. In the Serpent Mound in Ohio, there are a group of beings that are in libraries under the Serpent Mound that are called the Westatmanu. And we've spoken about them, I think, Rogier, on one of the previous shows, how they were the ancestors of the Maya, or is that one we did for YouTube? I'm not quite sure, but they are the ancestors of the Maya. And they opened the outer membrane of the Earth. You know, and we thought that that was complete, and then Mother called a delegation of 300 from the inner Earth and instructed them to go out of an opening on the side of Mount Shasta in California, and then she gave them a very specific destination that they had to go to, a delegation of 300 from the inner Earth. There were two steps, however, required before this has become an actuality, and it's in the process of happening. Step one is that the etheric realms had to step down to our physicality so that they could become physical enough to share a relationship with humanity. This was done when Mother, in fact, stepped down some of her higher bodies into her physical body. And it coincided with stepping down what represented the higher body of the Earth. I mentioned in Secrets of the Hidden Realms that they represent the etheric. And it stepped down the etheric of the Earth into the physical. That was the first step that had to take place. And then there was this extraordinary event happening where a chant was given to one of the other oracles from the Arunatvi, where she lost hours of time, and when she awoke, the strong, you know, message was there that this chant had to be said, because there's a tunnel, even removing the inner membrane and the outer membrane, there's an actual tunnel with three large chambers as you go from the inner Earth through to the outer Earth. And there was a door on each side, and it required a key to open it and a chant to open it. And so that key and chant, I just actually 2 nights ago had to speak for Mother into the physical to open that tunnel. So they're on their way. It's extraordinary. There's 300 of them coming, and they'll be as physical as we are.
And does that imply, because you speak about these openings, but does that imply that before there was no access to the inner Earth? Or to the Earth?
It was very difficult. It was very difficult. There was an access, and there were openings way back in 2006. But because there was corruption at that time, Mother sealed both. So she sealed the inner Earth and she sealed the outer Earth. So if you spoke about 2005, it was more accessible than in 2007. So she sealed them. This particular sister was inside. She was teleported. This oracle was teleported into the tunnel itself. So clearly, you know, and I have been, but I always went through specific tunnels into the inner Earth. And the tunnel, there was a tunnel made here for me. And I write about it, I think, in the Unicorn book, that there was a tunnel made here for me so I could get back and forth to the inner Earth. But unless there's a specific tunnel made, it was very difficult for anyone to even see where the opening is. If you look at the map of the tunnel that comes through to Mount Shasta, it looks like there's no door on this outer Earth side. The door is created through two sigils. There's a double door that is there. It's created through two sigils, or symbols, if you will, and the chant. But it's very hidden. Nobody would know where it is.
Okay, but I was actually referring to accounts that have been written of people accidentally flying with airplanes into the inner Earth, where the entrance points would be at the poles. I was just wondering how to gauge those accounts.
That's very possible that that happened. In fact, it's likely that it happened. Because if you look, you know, at Secrets of the Hidden Realms, I give the population that's there. You'll see that there's Jewish people that speak a derivative of Hebrew. They're short people. They're remnants of the 10 lost tribes. there are Germanic people that, you know, that came in the Middle Ages, actually, in a ship that went up the headwaters of the Amazon. Goodness knows how they got this. 1600s, I guess that's more of a Renaissance period. It's not really Middle Ages, but it was in the 1600s. And they went up the headwaters of the Amazon, and they found their way in there. So there's a Germanic population. There are definite Scandinavian place names if you look at the map. And so the Scandinavians, at some point, somebody must have found their way in. And then there are, from ancient Atlantean and ancient Lemurian civilizations, taller people that are in there. And basically they have the same racial groups that we have, and then additional ones, like the giants and so on.
And how does the inner earth relate to the etheric realms?
The inner earth, the largest part of their population was etheric. Now, I will tell you, I don't know if there are some that were, actually, I'm hearing no, that's not the case. They were all etheric. So they would move in there, and when they were in the midst of everyone else that's etheric, they would raise up in frequency. An example of that, Rogier, is in our classes. For instance, in my last class in Ohio, there were 25 people. 20 were brand new. The five there were ascended masters. By the end of 5 days of class, they were all either in God consciousness or ascended mastery, and they were all speaking the ancient languages, writing the ancient languages. There were two or three that were lagging a bit behind it, but their abilities were awakened. They just have to go home and do it. But the point is, it's the company they keep. Amongst other things, it's also the work that's done. If you live long enough amongst etheric beings, like we've often had classes where the entire class is moving into the etheric realms for our work, and we're not visible to people that come in and out the door. Very similar to that. They would all have moved into the etheric realms. And also, as I write in that book, The Secrets of the Hidden Realms, a very major and dramatic shift happened for the people of the inner earth. I can't remember how many years it was ago, 20 years ago or something, but there was a very huge cataclysm where things, there was a freezing inside, and then a melting and huge cataclysms. And at that time, a very major miracle happened en masse, possibly the largest miracle ever to happen on Earth, simply because of how many people saw it. And it changed them completely. Those, you know, it's about 90% of the population survived major cataclysms because of this miracle. And it shifted them into the etheric realm.
I was also thinking about how the inner earth relates to the etheric as the outer earth does to the physical, and was thinking if you could elaborate on that a little.
Yes. These levels, as in our bodies, as in the Earth's body, they're all in the frequency component in them is an octave higher. So even though they're made of the same building blocks, the frequency component makes it an octave higher. When there's an octave higher, you're a whole invisible world apart. And so that is where they have been, and so they have represented the etheric body of the earth. We have been in our frequency down an octave, and therefore to us they would not be tangible and visible. Now Mother has lowered their frequency an octave to make them tangible and visible to us. And, you know, we should just clarify that it should not be confused with enlightenment. In other words, you can have something that's 4 or 5 octaves above us, that's extremely ethereal, and it can contain more impurity than perhaps at the physical level. The frequency raises means how tangible or dense you are, but not necessarily how enlightened you are. It does mean that you see differently, because when you're very physical, you basically just see what's in front of you. If you're octaves above that, you can see, for instance, if you ask a question to the non-physical cosmos, if you will, everybody can see if it's true, and everybody can see if it's not. At the physical level, you know, we have to use our inner guidance.
So, to be clear, it's not like their information, well, you would say that their information is better necessarily than ours in the physical.
Good question. See, their information of what is better. Our information of what isn't is exponentially more advanced. So this is, you know, as we've often said on the show, it is in the physicality where the unknown meets the known. And beings in higher octaves, they're just not good at accessing that. And we are. So our job is to deal with the unknown. Their job is basically to interpret the known. You know, Rogier, I think we should take our first commercial break. And stay with us, folks. We'll be back in a few moments.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse, Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today. A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. You are joining us for our second segment of our show. Andrew here will continue right along.
All right. In the first part, you spoke about in August 2006 all illusion being solved. And we have a question about that because some people are wondering, some of your students, what exactly is the status of this now, and especially when it would seem that illusion is still there.
Okay. First of all, yesterday, a major, major leap in consciousness was made in the cosmos. Many natural disasters, for instance, Japan, between Japan and China, huge earthquake possibility was there the day before yesterday. You know, areas where there was grave concern, Tibet, other areas of grave concern, Israel. Yesterday, their reality completely changed. So I am very hesitant to speak about things today as though they were the day before yesterday. So I will speak more generically, because I think that we're going to see extremely beneficial things happening in areas where there was a real possibility for some very explosive disasters. Let's just take a look at the issue of what density is versus illusion. Because illusion was technically done away with in August of 2006. But beings representing illusion kept coming through time tunnels from the past, creating all sorts of problems up until February. In February, where this finally came to a head of 2008. That's like a year and a half lag between when illusion is solved and when beings in the cosmos that represent the illusion is gone. What is the difference? And okay, so now they're gone, but now there's still people living as though there is illusion. So there's three steps to it. So firstly, I will tell you that illusion was gone. Then I will tell you, as of the middle of February 2008, that perpetrators and imposter gods and so on representing it is gone. And now I will tell you that a lot of density has been done away with. It isn't complete, but we're dealing now with density. What the difference is first of all, we got rid of illusion. Then we had to get rid of linear time, polarity, and duality. As long as those existed, those representing illusion would raise their head because illusion could come back. Now, we have to deal with density. So how can we define those three things? And by the way, here, I cannot tell you what it means to me to answer deep questions like this, because it's the depth that I don't often get to in my day-to-day work, because the amount of information flooding me is so huge that all I can do, as every moment that I can, I'm writing down as much as I can. So folks, by the way, should watch for electronic books. Our book about the translations of the Isis libraries is out, Opening the Doors of Heaven. It's available. And it should be soon available, if not already, electronically on our website. But because we're several books behind in publishing it, that are manuscripts that are completed, but I haven't been able to catch up with editing it. So this kind of depth is a joy to me, because it's what I would really like to be doing all the time. But instead, I'm gathering wits, if you will. So let's take a look at what illusion is. The illusion that was gone in August of 2006 basically is that there were portions of existence that were being mirrored to the Mother, the one infinite being whose first and most precious creation was the Father, and then she created with Father the cosmos. Mother created them as mirrors, but there was a wild card thrown in there that they had freedom of choice. To some extent, the freedom of choice often chose to live that which she was not. But because she was attempting to understand her being more fully, she couldn't discard that they weren't mirroring to her what might have been something valid that she needed to improve. So when there were things mirrored that Mother did not know whether they were her or not, that is called illusion. And many light workers played roles for other light workers to study this illusion, and then, lifetime after lifetime, they'd switch places and so on. After August, there was no need for any light being to play the role of illusion. They at that point got the instruction that the purpose of life has changed, that the new purpose was to find unknown ways that which Mother is can be explored, rather than that which she isn't. That's the big change that happened there. Polarity is growth through pulsation in a linear fashion, like You sit on one chair, I sit on the other chair, we toss a pillow back and forth. That is how growth has taken place until approximately February, March of 2008. Even though linear time as the movement of awareness across space ended in August of 2006, and for those that are interested, I've written all about that in The Ring of Truth. Even though it ended there, anything that had a linear relay of information still created some form of linear time. So, in October of 2007, Mother closed down space, meaning the cosmos no longer traveled along specific designated pathways or routes. It stopped, and it just became brighter and brighter and bigger and bigger. It had assimilated all other individuated life. So space shut down. And so when the cosmos still traveled linearly, that also created time. When polarity pulsed in linear fashion between positive and negative, that also created linear time. Layer upon layer upon layer of linear relay of information, the nature of light and sound was changed. A language of love light, where light can be heard and sound can be seen, was created in the cosmos so that the electrical and magnetic can empathically and telepathically immediately communicate. So then the other thing that was done away with until February was polarity and duality. And what duality is like someone taking a beautiful tapestry and separating its threads so they can observe how the pattern was created. It's the separating of that which really should be together to form the whole picture. But it was for the study meticulously of the detail that duality came to be. Duality ceased, and polarity ceased, and linear relay and linear time ceased after layers of work by March of 2008. Now, what we're clearing up is density. And density can be defined as two things. The one is the one we usually associate it with. Density, if it applies to that which Mother is not, had as its real part, that's gone. And that's been gone since 2006, August, when Mother knew what she was and what she wasn't. She pulled the rug out from what wasn't, in that it became unreal. Its inner life was removed. People still chose to live ways that Mother is not. They still do. But that's not the only thing that's density. Because freedom of choice is still allowing people to cling to ways of that which Mother is not. But there's another thing about density that has been overlooked. Because now, the crusade right now, so to speak, as these libraries open, each one of them has a secret in it that Mother eons ago implanted in them that they release as they open, and I've been writing them down as fast as I can. Mother has been putting them in the book of the one life which changes her being. She's removing obsolete patterns of functioning within her own body. That means density is not just that which she's not, but density also is that which is obsolete, meaning at one point it did reflect her highest knowledge. But then through eons of creation, she gained more experiential knowledge. And now, although it used to be what she was, there's a higher way, and so it's obsolete. See, that also is density. So that is currently what is being removed. I can tell you that there is, 53 plus 54 is 107. There's 107 libraries that yet have to open. Each one of them has something that has to be removed in the form of a layer of obsoleteness or density. And, you know, that's the best way I can answer this.
And when you say they are gone, referring to villains, it seems to be a different gone now than, say, 2 years ago, in that much more at the root, or all of it at the root, is being resolved. Is that correct?
Yeah. Oh, that, thank you. That's such a good question. You see, yes, because what Mother was doing before, and why she did this is because, you know, there's this incredible story as to why Mother actually allowed portions of herself to go to sleep so that she went into a deep forgetfulness with all but a little portion of her being. But what she was doing, she was changing, and we mentioned this, I think, last time, but she was trying to change the screen where the movie was being projected. You know, like if there was a fly on the projector, she was hitting it with the fly swatter on the screen. And so villains increased and increased and increased, even though there was no need for them, till that actually became very clear that Mother was changing the screen. And see, the incredible thing that happened, most of the masters don't even know this one yet, is that the Book of Life, spoken of in Revelations, has been that which has been designed to dictate the laws of the screen. That was done away with just a week or two ago. And instead, she has kept only the Book of the One Life, which means she's not trying to change the screen anymore. If there's a villain up there, there's a villain being projected from the projector. She's changing the film inside the projector. And that is the Book of the One Life, which changes herself and Father. If there's a villain, she changes within. The only reason the villains kept coming back is because Mother did not realize how many layers there were to remove of linear time, duality, and polarity. Hundreds of layers that I've witnessed.
Which is what they represented, of course.
Yes. Because, see, they were possibilities. As long as those things were there, a fall could come back. And so they would keep being there to mirror that.
So now it might actually be more exact to say where it's gone implies that they were ever there. Now it seems to be more of being entirely uncreated, so they never even were. Is that correct?
Everything that Mother changes, she changes and carries back to the very beginning of creation, and in some instances before creation, depending on what it is. So in other words, she can do that because there really is only one moment. An example. This is a really interesting example. When I was working with the Order of the Serpent Mound in Ohio last month, there were two galaxies. Now, a galaxy is a huge Milky Way, right? And some are larger than us. Mother decreed that there were two galaxies that had to be entirely removed. She's also made it that light, unless we in experiments expect it to behave in a certain way, it is in fact behaving differently. Light is exponential and immediate. There was a recorded explosion way out in deep space, unlike anything that has ever, ever been seen by our telescopes, that NASA, I think it's NASA, documented on the very day that the masters were told that Mother is eliminating two galaxies. So I asked Mother this morning, I said, is this one of the galaxies that was eliminated? Because Mother found those two galaxies to be so non-life enhancing. There wasn't a single life in them that had really deserved the right to continue on as the cosmos ascended. And at the same time, two libraries were done away with. At the same time, two portions of mother's brain completely had their functions rewritten. So, you know, this is all the way to the macrocosm. This goes on and on in the microcosm. But that happened, and immediately the telescopes picked it up the same day, the reason being that light is now exponential, and in that instance, they didn't have any expectations around it. I asked Mother this morning if that was indeed one of the galaxies exploding, and she said, yes, it was. She said they just didn't see the other one.
Okay.
Sorry, what was your question again? Because I was tying it into your question, and I forgot now what you asked me.
I'm not exactly sure either.
Okay, well, I forget, but you know what? Here's the good news. It's a commercial break time. We'll figure it out during the commercial break. Be with us soon, folks. We'll just take a minute.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Almaine continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almaine is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almaine, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Well, welcome back, and because you are not able to tell us what it was we were asking, and neither one of us can remember, we will very smoothly go on to the next question. Go ahead, Rahir. Bail me out here.
Yeah, it's always very interesting when minds draw a blank. Anyway, we've got a next question, and it's about the soft palette as a repository of energy, which you have, I don't know if you've written of it before, but you certainly have spoken of it before. And the question really is if you could outline what you mean by that, what it entails.
Oh, okay. Well, the interesting thing of it is I just recently translated something about that. And so if you don't mind a bit of rustling of papers, I will see if I can find it. But let me tell you in the meantime what there is.
Well, what is it, first of all? Because I'm not entirely sure, and what is its function, I think, is really the question.
Yes, and what I can do is I can look it up in my next little commercial break. But the soft palate in the back of the throat is actually in some way connected with the pineal gland. I'm not entirely sure how that is, but I do know that when you go into ascended mastery, the second level, and we have this illustrated and explained in Secrets of the Hidden Realms, but when you go into ascended mastery second level, which is the level at which the body should be going into immortality, there's a profoundly deep bliss that you enter into, and there's an excretion that comes out in the back of the soft palate, meaning if you put your tongue way back in your throat, up against the roof of your mouth, behind the bony area, there's a softness, that area. There's an excretion that comes out of that area that is a very sweet substance. So you're in this bliss state, and this honey-like substance comes out in the back of your soft palate. So that is one thing that occurs there. The second thing that occurs there is that when you do mystical work, when you're moving back and forth between realms, you know, mystics are aware of this, but the average person is not. And I know that our listeners are well beyond average persons, okay? They are the cream of the crop. But the point is that it's available to everyone. When you are doing mystical travels and there's a point where you just need that extra boost of energy to break through a membrane or whatever it is you're doing, to put the tip of your tongue way back in the throat in that palate area with a soft palate where the bony part goes into the soft gives you a boost of energy because behind that area there is a repository of energy that stays there at all times. That is there for everybody. Women actually have a repository of energy also in their uterus. So, you know, I've had instances in my classes and things where people get overwhelmed from the intensity of the work, and it used to be that way. It's not so much anymore, but there have been times, you know, I've had people lying on little mattresses around the room when I'm teaching because of the intensity of the work and how rapidly they have to progress. They just really can't even sit up. But by the end of that week, when they leave, they're in ascended mastery or whatever. So in those instances, what I work with women is getting as much energy to them as they can to help them with the transition, and I usually go to the uterus to transfer energy out. But for everybody, that area in the soft palate, if you put your tongue there, for instance, during meditation or during a time you need more energy, it will release it.
All right. And you just now said about students in the class at the end of the week being in their ascended mastery or some other advanced state. How is this possible? Could you explain that? Because I think a lot of people who haven't been to the pods would like to know.
Well, okay. If you know, I mentioned, for instance, that there were 20 new people, as in first time ever exposure in Ohio. If you were to ask them what happened that week, I mean, they would really hesitate to even say, because it would sound, it can't be conveyed with words. The depth of what happened there in 1 week, now I can say that about the week before, you know, the part before, it is incredibly profound. And every time we meet together, it's different. They're in the company of people that have already gone into ascended mastery, into levels that are so beyond where we even imagine. And because they're in their presence, they themselves go through it. The miracles that happen, the miracles have continued to happen with that group. you know, that long after that week. It's very difficult to explain exactly what goes on in a week like that, because basically all they're doing is sharing my life. That's a week I would have lived. They're sharing it, and they're contributing it, making it possible for me to do much greater work, and themselves getting such huge rewards because of the fact that for that week, they become the pivot point of growth. And I mean all growth. Because the earth in this dense level is the pivot point. It's from the bottom where ascension of the cosmos takes place. Humanity is the archetype because they're the densest. And within that archetype, when a pod meets, they become that week's most refined archetype, the greatest pivot point. They don't sneeze, but that it has an important implication. And so for that gift that they give to the cosmos, the gifts back are extraordinary. And, you know, what those stages mean would really be better if the listeners were to just, I believe we have an electronic book up, because it's not in its first 3 months of publication. It's, you know, much less expensive than a physical book. But Secrets of the Hidden Realms is up electronically on our website. We in detail explain the transfigurations that occur in the fields around the body, at which point the cells themselves transfigure, etc. But there's massive transfigurations that happen under those conditions that are so accelerated that within 5 days they have gone through the gamut of it.
And that is because?
It's because of their role they play, which for that week makes it it makes it the most important role in the cosmos for that week. Secondly, because of the company that they're in. And thirdly, for much of what is needed from them to be done can really only be done by masters. The classes that are coming together, and, you know, I had one of the sisters write to me. She's one of the new masters in my class. She said, what a silly word for what we've just been through, class. It's a ridiculous word. She's so right. I mean, I feel embarrassed just even to call such a sacred event a class, because it's not like I'm standing there lecturing. They're involved in gathering information as much as I am. You know, I just put it together because that's a gift that Mother has given me. But so that is essentially what is happening. Well, here, let's take our final commercial break. And thank you for these questions.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almeen experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego. In 2000, in the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almeen's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almeen's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the premier CD set. They are available from Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
We're now in our last segment. We have about 8 minutes left. So, Rogier, I think we have time for two quick questions or one very juicy one.
Okay, well, I think we've got a juicy one. It's one a question which we've got lined up for our iTunes and our YouTube project as well, but nonetheless, I think we can go into it here. It's really about what is identity, and especially in terms of what you have referred to as the damaged core personality.
Okay. And what Rogier is referring to is that when damage has been done to the inner child, it is particularly prone to cling to identity, and because of the fact that it gives it value. And so to define damage to the inner core, it would be to the inner child itself. And that's the place where we start to recognize self-worth, is in the inner child, and then, of course, it goes outwards. This is a problem even when somebody has self-worth as an adult. If their inner child doesn't have it, the core personality is damaged. That makes it hard to let go of identity. Identity can be defined two different ways. The first way is that identity is that you you have personal labels. You see yourself in a certain way, or you think of yourself as this. And you find light workers going through this. You know, I'm the second son of Isis's daughter, or I'm the this or the that. You know, so what? Because we are ultimately a being as vast as the cosmos having a human experience. But initially, those identities help us to think a little bigger, and then we get a bigger identity, and then it helps us to think a little bigger again. And finally, when we make that transition from identifying with those labels, as well as the second part of identity consciousness, which is as well as our thoughts, our emotions, and the body. This little bundle of emotions and thoughts and body is not our true selves. It's not our true highest identity, if you will. It's the identity consciousness that keeps us locked into taking things at face value. So the personal labels, you know, which gives us self-importance and so on, and then secondly, the identifying with this small entity as our being, that is what identity consciousness is. So as we can see, those labels can, with an initiate, help to get them to think of themselves as John Brown working in the dentist's office in the receptionist desk. In fact, then John Brown starts to think of himself as a priest officiating in the temples of Isis or whatever he thinks. So he starts to think a little bigger. And whether he was that or not, that's not the point. He thinks he was that. It makes him act from a bit larger perspective. But eventually, those crutches, too, become totally meaningless. And if one does not properly parent your inner child, if we do not take the time to get self-knowledge, to understand what we love, what we desire, what our characters are like, what our personalities are that's uniquely our own, to understand those aspects of our uniqueness. Secondly, to have self-acceptance for them, and self-love and self-regard. Those four things need to be given to the child. And the child needs to be parented by the inner nurturer. We have written much about that in Journey to the Heart of God, in A Life of Miracles, that not parenting your child can truly trip you up later on down the road at the very moment when you think you've reached the apex of human development and you're getting ready to move into the God kingdom. It absolutely can trip you up. And so it needs to be dealt with regularly. That child needs to know that it's safe. And so how to do that is in those books. But when that child is dealt with, letting go of these self-important labels. And as I say, they're not, you know, sometimes they serve a purpose, but at some point, the bed of that's a little cot needs to be exchanged for a double bed. So does that help a little bit? And I think we have time for one more.
Well, yeah, I think so, but I think it's good to expand on it a little more because we don't, of course, want to step on any toes, but this sort of clinging to labels and such takes on, it raises its head much more than you would think, because I see it amongst a lot of light workers, whether it's about, well, I don't know if we really want to name the topics here, but ETs and hidden rulers and such, and I think it's, there has to come a time, because I had it myself as well for years, that we see these tendencies for what they are, namely as clinging to identity. Is that correct?
Yes, we do. And there's a series of, available upon order audios that we have out that people can look at on our website. But one of them is the Path to Freedom. And the Path to Freedom that I put there, it has very, very excellent information on how to overcome personal labels. Personal labels stem from self-importance. And Toltec seers have for eons been studying self-importance because it's so prevalent. And they found that ultimately its roots lay in its opposite side of the coin, which is self-pity. And so it's something we use because we don't feel big enough inside. The interesting thing of it was, see, the Toltec way, if we look at the second part of the book, The Gift of the Unicorns, it tells us that Mother designed the Toltec way when she saw that she was going into very deep sleep. And she designed it because of the fact that she wanted to be able to create a way in which the illusion around her could be turned into stepping stones. The information that she kept was disseminated to little bands of seers and Toltecs and mystery schools all over the earth to keep alive during the ages of darkness. The one piece that she did not reveal to them, that was revealed actually only in the last years, was the fact of ruthlessness with self. Ruthlessness with self and gentleness with others was the hallmark of a spiritual warrior. It takes ruthlessness to get rid of these labels. And it's important for masters that get thrust into their mastery, so to speak, by being in the right place at the right time in my classes, to go back and study those things. Study the details. Because when things come easily, their roots are not always as deep. So to go back and study the roots is an important thing. And certainly, a path to freedom is one such set that they can look at. Our time has come to a close, you know. Did you quickly want to ask something?
Well, yeah, and this would be more worthwhile than to sort of find out who we were and what our identity was in past lives and things like that.
Well, especially considering that those realities have been totally removed by Mother. Well, we'd better close. Our time has truly come to an end. Rogier, thank you. Those were wonderful questions, and it's taken us to look very deeply at some subjects that I love looking at. And thank you, too, to our listeners. if you feel that there are those that would appreciate this information, please remember to tell your friends about us. We depend on you for this show. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
We hope you enjoyed today's show, The Mystical World We Live In, with Almeen. Please join us again next week.